hello. I am Claire Madeline Culkin, your new host of the New Books Network. Today we are here with Liran Rozinski, the author of Freud, Psychoanalysis, and Death, published by Cambridge University Press in 2010. So Liran, I wanted to begin speaking with you today about the fact that although this work was published in 2010, this has come out of over a decades long worth of work that began with your dissertation. You introduced the book in the acknowledgement section by saying that you've been thinking for a very long time about existential questions that relate to you on a more personal level, and that this led to a more professional kind of consideration and philosophical consideration about whether psychoanalytic and philosophical and existential questions were the same thing. Can you speak a little bit to that point just to introduce the concept of the work and the subject matter to our listeners?
Yeah, well, I just start by correcting it. It did just come out last year, actually. It's 2013.
Oh, I apologize for that mistake. That must have been a typo. You're right.
It's the fruit of many years of thought and writing. And it is also true that it started out from more personal debates and concerns. Specifically, there is a good friend of mine. We used to discuss a lot these matters, both of us interested in existential questions on the one hand and psychoanalytic thought on the other hand. And I specifically remember one time when we were talking about kinds of conflict and et cetera. And I said, well, this is related to the acknowledgement of death. And he said something, well, you know, like also the Oedipal issues, but this is more or less the same thing. And I said, no, it is not the same thing. I mean, it looks like the same thing. Maybe it is not the same thing. These existential questions they have the sort of independence. I mean, people can be concerned about these questions without this reflecting conflicts of a psychoanalytic nature. And later on, when I was studying clinical psychology, I couldn't help seeing how there is a constant narrowing down of what is considered the psychic world, what is considered what parts of our much larger psychic life is considered, let's say, interesting from a dynamic point of view. And I always felt that there is something that is left out. I mean, there is a lot that is gained from this, and we can work with patients and everything, but there is a lot that is left out. Yeah, so finally I ended up writing this book, and where I try to address this problem in a much larger way and inquire about the role of death and death anxiety and death-related concerns in psychic life in general, but mostly in psychoanalytic thought.
Mm-hmm. We learn in your book that although Freud writes a lot about death in many, many, many different ways, from speaking about the death drive to speaking about differential responses to different kinds of losses, and even in our dreams, he breaks down how we dream different constructions of death. It's as though there is this bit of it that's always slipping away from his discourse. It's as though he's talking himself out of having to talk about death, which yeah. You raise may have been a personal thing that kind of had implications for the way that this philosophical system of thought is organized. I think that kind of speaks to this conflict you were saying just a minute ago, that psychoanalytic questions about death and existential questions about death are different in a really significant way. Would you be able to draw that out a little bit? I just think that's a really interesting point.
Well, I just want to say just maybe two more general sentences about what I was trying to do. I was trying to point out a certain lacuna or a repression in psychoanalytic thought, and I think practice too, with regard to death. And I think that death is constantly left out of the picture. Either it is reduced to other issues, mm-hmm. castration, separation, whatever, or it is ignored altogether, or it is or sexualized, or aspects of it are forgotten, and it's transformed in. But I mean, any one of these effects ends up in leaving it in out of the picture. And I just think that psychoanalysis as a theory of the human mind, of the human being, just cannot leave out something that is so central. Now, in Freud, my book is not just about Freud. It starts with Freud.
Yes.
But it's true that with Freud, there are quite many places where he does discuss death. And then the question comes up whether this discussion of death is sufficient, or let's say, or satisfying for us to say that psychoanalysis, beginning with Freud, does deal with death. And I think that it is and it isn't. I mean, I there are many very interesting thoughts about death, about the way people try to avoid thinking about death, and about the way that the transience renders our life more interesting in a way. Mostly I speak about two papers, Thought for the Times on War and Death and mm-hmm. on Trans, both published in 1915. But other than that, I think the general picture is that of constantly pushing death out. And the things that Freud does say about death are many times very explicit in rejecting it. Like yeah. Freud says yeah. that death cannot have an unconscious existence because it's abstract, because it involves time, because it's a form of negation, because you never experienced anything like it, and because whenever we attempt to think about death, we find out that we are still there as spectators.
Yes.
He says that fear of death is always something else. That it's a variation of castration anxiety, and so it should be reduced to other things. And this position, reductive position, has been echoed really. It's throughout psychoanalysis. I mean, some of these echoes are more famous, perhaps. There is Fanichel in 1945 saying that probably every fear of death covers other unconscious ideas. I mean, this is, he does say every. So,
yes.
And you have maybe Jones saying that dread of death invariably proves clinically to be the expression of repressed death wishes against loved objects. So, invariably proves. And my concern was whether, I mean, I accept that sometimes this is the case, that behind something that looks like fear of death, there is something else. But I was asking myself whether, is it really so? Is fear of death never actually fear of death? I mean, does it have to be something else?
Well, it has a very oppressive presence. The concept of death itself, I think, is very oppressive. And it has an oppressive presence within the whole of psychoanalytic thought that I think, as you point out, kind of begins with Freud and is manifested on the level of the complication in thinking about something, that is both concrete and fundamentally ethereal. Freud, I think, tends toward dealing with this issue by displacing it and getting around it, and as you say, reducing it. And the irony in that is that we're dealing with something very finite and very concrete, but yet that has something about it that doesn't really touch on that level, and so it manifests in all of these different displacements.
I agree. A sort of combination of being too abstract to ruminate and to think about, and too concrete to
pin down. This is something that I think, if we think about this as being part of the problem, we can think about it kind of in relationship to Freud as a neurologist, He Kotwa is a neuroscientist. He kind of, his entire system of thought kind of came out of the limit of concrete reality in explaining something about human subjectivity. And I think this very essential problematic that instigates the entire beginning of his system of thought kind of comes full circle in the problematic of dealing with death sort of towards the end of his theory. It just kind of circles and circles and circles in this way. There was a point in the book where you kind of give a definition of death, but before a definition of death in your eyes, before we kind of get towards there, would we be able to kind of just unpack your central thesis? You organize Freud's consideration of death into two basic ways of thinking that are problematic in this way, similarly as the concrete and the abstract are two separate aspects of death and the reality of death that kind of undermine one another. Freud has two ways of thinking that also undermine one another in a way that kind of causes the concept of death to be displaced in all of these very bizarre ways. Would you be able to speak a little bit to that point to kind of introduce the readers to the main argument in your book?
Well, as I said, I think there is a sort of forgetfulness or repression with regard to death in psychoanalysis in general. And this could be traced out from beginning of Freud right until contemporary psychoanalysis, with exceptions, etc. But this is the general point. I mean, just to make my point, open up any psychoanalytic book on your shelf. You can do it now, okay? And just, you know, search the index. Search for death. Not death drive, not death of a specific person. My bet is that you will not find it. You will not find. And so basically a very fundamental aspect of human lives. People do think about death all the time, are concerned with it. It's part of even if we don't think concretely and explicitly about it, this is part of our lives. And I just think that as long as psychoanalysis doesn't address this difficulty within the theory, this will continue troubling it from the inside. I mean, there is something problematic about the theory if it just leaves out something so fundamental and it still wants to be a theory of the human being. Now, in Freud specifically, okay.
I think a way to begin is just by saying that death is included in the theory. It's included in ways that are very complicated, that raise interesting questions about human subjectivity. I don't know that, you know, I feel like it's possible that if we kind of just assert this position that in the whole of psychoanalytic thought, there is no, death is not spoken about in a very specific way that kind of allows a conversation to happen, we're going to come up against the same problem, you know, that we were speaking about a few minutes ago before we began this interview. This problem that I had in kind of approaching the interview in a kind of organized fashion.
I can address that. I think. I want to say something about Freud, but before that, I want to address what you just said.
Sure.
Obviously, what I just said is not true, in the sense that there are many specific areas in psychoanalysis that where there is attention to death. And you can think about work on suicide, on grief, on the severely ill, on the dying patient, on traumatic traumatic events, and maybe even Holocaust and stuff like that. So in many areas you could find a more clinically attuned contributions that do ask about that. I think part of my concern was that death is not posed as a question on a more general level. I mean, you can find wherever there is a specific population that is concerned about death, like, you know, the seriously ill or those who lost somebody and are mourning, etc. So you have attention to death in theory. But the thing is that death is not a problem only to those who just lost somebody or are seriously ill. I mean, we are all going to die one day, even if we are healthy and did not lose anyone. And so, and we know that. We know that from a very young age. And that, and so I think the problem, when I say death is not addressed, I mean, it's not addressed as a general psychological issue. So, okay. And now with regard to Freud, I think this is also a way to, you know, to counter my my general argument. There is in Freud a lot of attention to death that is unique and interesting, and you could feel, I mean, whereas you could feel in Freud, you can feel him moving between these positions. It has to do with his medical background, but I think there is the what he really thinks and what he allows himself to say theoretically. This is also reflected in the fact that in his personal life he was completely obsessed with death. I mean, completely. You know, these calculations about the age he's going to die, and John says in his biography that Freud parted with people at the age of 40, saying goodbye, I might never see you again. Mm-hmm. That he had attacks of severe death anxiety every day of his life. So it's not that, oh shit, I just never thought about it. He did think about it, and he was, and you can find in his personal letters, and also in all the cultural papers, like the two I mentioned before, like Totem and Taboo, like The Uncanny, in all these cultural papers where it's not, you know, producing psychoanalytic theory, you could find a lot of attention to death. And then what happens whenever he has a more clinically oriented paper or a more psychoanalytic theory paper, it's forgotten and reduced in the ways that I talked about. And then in some interesting places, you could just see these points alternating. I tried to show in my book about one place. This is the Thoughts for the Times on War and Death. This is the one article. You know, it's like 20 pages, and you can see there are pages there that others say that are like you got all of Heidegger on death in three pages in Freud. And then you have statements that do exactly the opposite and say it's not important and should be reduced to something else and doesn't have any unconscious manifestation. And the two positions kind of undermine each other. I mean, the text, if you take him seriously, you can hardly read the text. And another place which is interesting, I find, is the interpretation of dreams, where contrary to what Freud says, I think there is a very constant and obsessive, almost, presence of death in the book, in Freud's own dreams. I mean, it's everywhere, death.
Yeah.
And if you want to understand the interpretation of dreams, you kind of have to acknowledge that. And so, if I take this just as a clinical example, so the one clinical example, the most important one, the interpretation of dreams, Freud's own dreams, are saturated with death.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's also, for me, it points out the need to bring it back into the theory, not to just let it, you know, show itself when you try to avoid it, but just, you know, acknowledge it and try to think about it and ask, what would be a psychoanalytically a psychoanalytic position on death that will not be just, you know, dismissing it? How could psychoanalysis understand this?
Right, it's everywhere. It's everywhere in the theory, you say, in a way that is a problem that doesn't kind of go beyond its oppressive presence. It's this oppression that's just kind of there. It's just kind of always there. I think something that positions you in a very unique way to approach psychoanalytic conceptions of death is that you're approaching it from a kind of combination of a combination of different fields. When I kind of reached this point in reading your book, where I felt like I was encountering that same kind of oppression, just because it's always coming up against the concept of death is difficult. Coming up against somebody else's concept of death is difficult. This is something that I experience in reading Freud, just like you point out. It's something I experience in my life on a personal level. And it's certainly something that comes up when you read any text on death. I asked you to kind of give me some other texts that would speak to this point in a different way. Same point, different way. And you gave me a paper that I thought was really interesting. It looks at, as you noted in our email exchange, the more literary and philosophical dimensions of the idea. And it spoke to a very particular piece of your book that deals with the peculiar nature of sacrifice in addressing this concern of death. There's a way in which in sacrifice, we can elevate the experience of death to the level of the symbolic. We look at the concrete reality of death and confront it in a way that allows us to incorporate it into life more on its level. Would you say am I picking up on what you're saying in that section, or am I missing something? I think I was drawn very much to thinking about sacrifice as reinterpreting the concrete.
Well, you're referring to a paper I wrote about Freud and Georges Bataille, the French sociologist and author. In that paper, I mean, it's published a few years ago, but in that paper, I tried to compare a certain paradox that they both find with regard to death. Namely, what that Freud says, that we cannot imagine death because whenever we do so, we are still there as spectators. Therefore, we never really imagine death because we imagine death while alive. And Bataille is concerned that whenever we think about that we can, that we are only completely aware of death when we die, so we cannot be aware of death. It's a kind of a Hegelian French paradox that you can find in Blanchot and Leris and Bataille and others. But so for Bataille, sacrifice is a kind of way that allows us to think about death in a concrete way without dying. And this is exactly the question. How can we integrate it into psychic thought, into our life, so feel it actually. And he proposes sacrifice, but I really think that sacrifice is not a position, is not something that, you know, now is of interest for us. But in that same comparison of Freud and Bataille, there's a possibility of theater and there are other possibilities. I think mostly the thing is that death, what should be maintained is that death is not, it should not be read on the abstract level. You know, I sometimes feel that whenever, like, that Freud actually thinks that only existential philosophers fear death. He has, in quite a few places, when he speaks about death, he has this thing against philosophers. Like, here the philosophers are thinking too philosophically, or the high-sounding phrase, every fear is the fear of death, it has hardly any meaning. So this high-sounding, this philosopher thing, whereas psychoanalysis would address the concrete. But I think there is hardly anything more concrete than death in our lives. And death is not a problem for existential philosophers. It's a problem for everyone. And the only question is, how can we address that? When I just maybe two more sentences.
No,
I think in, I leave this article that you mentioned now, just to say that I think what I tried to offer towards the end is that I have no quarrel with Freud's idea that it's very hard for us to think about death and that death cannot really be part of the unconscious. I just think this is not a reason to rule it out and to say, okay, well, it's not there, but to say, well, you know, there is this thing that we just can't grapple with. We can't take it in, cannot understand it. It remains an absurd, paradoxical thing that we know that we are not able to think through. And I think this produces anxiety and produces psychic work to try to overcome this, to try to and I think I try to show a little bit how this could also be seen in Freud's own writing, but I mean, the fact that we cannot get something more concrete does not mean that it has no importance.
Right. The interesting thing that I'm kind of noting in thinking about sacrifice as a kind of theater, it raises the possibility of theater, is that as a solution to dealing with death's most concrete aspects, what we do in sacrifice, and if we're going to think about sacrifice as structuring a relationship to death that can be repeated maybe in different ways that allow us to take the concrete up into our lives in a meaningful way that functions. We're taking a thing, a concrete, real thing, and we're putting it in the context of theater, which is the context of the symbolic. It's a place where real life is represented. It's acted out in a kind of play. That confuses me a little bit when we're trying to talk about the concrete element of death. We deal with this in sacrifice on the most concrete level. And yet again, I find that we're up against a wall with the same paradox of these two elements and the way that they displace one another.
I think the problem is less, I mean, I think it's less about this symbolic, but more about identification. What Bataille recognizes, and I just for the listeners, I make clear that all this Bataille discussion is not part of the book. I mean, the book is only dealing with psychoanalytic thought. Yes. But the thing is that Bataille believes that in sacrificing, you can both observe death and identify with the one who dies, and this can happen also in theater. There is the question of identification, and identification is the one possible answer on how to make it palpable, how to be able to think of it in a way that would be relevant to us. But I also think that there are other ways, and I want to give maybe one example. I think Freud's search for an unconscious representation, the word representation comes out a lot, of death, it was looking in the wrong place, I think. I tried to show, for example, that death is part of psychic life in the way it influences, biases, and transforms and informs many other questions and concerns that we have. And to illustrate that, I address many of Freud's own concerns about ambition in his dreams, in the interpretation of dreams. There are so many concerns about, you know, being a professor and rivalry and narcissistic issues and you know, publishing his book, and it's so much. This is probably the central concern of the book. And in all these places, in all these dreams and associations where ambition comes up, it's always with regard to death. It's not whether I'll be a professor, but whether I'll be a professor before I'll die. Mm-hmm. And it's not whether I'll publish this work, but whether I'll publish this thing that can give me a form of immortality.
Yes.
And there's sort of a race between him and death. So just to take this one question of ambition, every projection of oneself into the future, every sort of comparison like this has is informed in a way by death. And this is also about ambivalence and about many sexual issues and narcissistic issues. So it is not that we have our psychic life and then there is also the question of death somewhere there with or without representation, but rather that everything that is circulating within our minds is already informed by our transience, by our knowledge of our finitude.
Okay. So when we raise this question about sacrifice and the possibility of the theater in allowing us to do something different to death, you express that what it allows us to do is identify. So it's not that there's some sort of symbolic structuring. It's that there's in the structure of the theater, there's the possibility for an identification. I see something similar in your example about the relation between Freud's ideas about ambition or his feelings about ambition and his feelings about death, that there's a way in which he's trying to escape the limit of himself. He's trying to escape the limit of the inevitable fatality of his existence and live on. I would almost say just kind of the way that I'm imagining this in my mind, I'm kind of imagining a picture of there being a self on one side of death and a self on the other side of death. And that in structuring this ambitious goal of living on as some kind of, you know, philosophical thinker or as a professor with a legacy, it's thinking about oneself on a kind of stage where you're identifying with the self that doesn't die. Do you have anything to kind of say to that? That's what's on my mind as I'm listening to you.
Well, I think that there is, there are places where there is this belief. I mean, people that think about death without really thinking that they will not be. Probably it's the case for some cases of suicide, etc.
I don't know that what I'm thinking is that the person in the identification with the self that lives on is doing so in an identification that nonetheless acknowledges death. Whether or not that is or is not the case, I'm saying that what happens in the imagining of the self as immortal, as living on, what happens in that imagining, whether you're acknowledging death or not, is this kind of identification with the self as another, similarly as one would identify with a player on a stage, or with some kind of sacrifice.
I think it's better to maybe to leave out this idea of identification, because I think many times the problem is really more of that of a lack, how to think a lack, how to think something that is absent. That was also my concern in writing the book, how to, you know, to talk about something that is missing from the theory, but it's also every one of us's own problem, how to think in something that is unimaginable. I mean, it's impossible to think in a way of the world without you, in a strong way, in this Freud is right. But I think we have many, many ways that to be reminded of this in everyday life. And I think we're running off time. I think clinicians should also be aware of that. I mean, just, you know, like when I give the example, you know, you're driving in your car, it's the road is wet, you slip for a second, you lose control, but then you regain control. But, you know, so something did happen. I mean, And there are many, you know, everyday situations like this when you do get a grasp for 1 second of what could be. And the fact that it's not only that that it's, you know, an abstract issue, it's a frightful issue. So there is a lot of repression going on in patients and in among analysts too. So the question is whether, I mean, sometimes people say, well, you know, it doesn't come up in therapy, so, you know, what do you want? It just doesn't come up. Where I think, you know, we're not looking for things that are only expressed clearly. We are, you know, we would look for hidden sources of gratification. We will look for the aggression when we can find it, for sexual issues, etc., and for overtones, and I think this is we need to develop the ear to hear about the very delicate ways in which death concerns do influence our life and the life of patients.
I kind of wanted to come back to a point that you had made about the complicated relationship between the uniqueness of death, its universality. So there's a way in which it's completely unique, and yet it's completely universal. It's completely, it's one thing that is present in every single one of our lives in, to a certain extent, that is exactly the same. And yet that we have no way of thinking about it because of this bizarreness. There's a quote that I wanted to just read because I think it touches really nicely on something that we've been talking about. You write that death is completely irreducible to a list of properties, but if we do list some, several appear to be peculiar to death. Death is not just annihilation in some general sense and is not an event like other possible events. It is also a singular, one-time event which we are certain will come, yet usually do not know when. It involves the flow of time and signifies it at any moment. It is not a future event and a permanent presence. Throwing death together with other psychic elements, even in a sincere attempt to explain it, involves beyond reduction, or perhaps as an aspect of it, a blurring of uniqueness. I think that quote just kind of brings together a lot of the things that we're talking about here, about the bizarre nature of it and the way that it's prone to slippage in the way that we think. When you say that we acknowledge death, you even say we acknowledge it for a moment, like a fleeting moment.
Yeah. I think what I was trying to address there, I think, is that there is an attempt. I mean, if I have a general point that death is reduced to other psychoanalytic issues like death wishes, like separation, castration, stuff like that. So on the one hand, it's understandable because we want to understand it in the terms that we do have. But the problem is that you kind of lose sight of what you wanted originally to explain. And I think there is a uniqueness to death that should be acknowledged in itself. One specific difficulty that is, I think, very problematic to psychoanalysis is the question of imminence, the fact that death could come at any moment. So what I'm saying is that if a theory, any theory, addresses a phenomenon and leaves out central aspects of this phenomenon, then the explanation it supplies is not sufficient. And I think I could see that in many psychoanalytic explanations, also, you know, I show that in Erikson and in others. Again, the book goes beyond Freud and deals with many other analysts, that for psychoanalysis, in a way, death is something that is yet to come, but life will go its full circle before that. So death is you leave, you have your entire life to live, and then you die. Whereas the basic problem with that is that you could die tomorrow. You know, a piano can fall on us now as we speak.
That's interesting.
This could be you know, terminated now by, and this is part of the problem we grapple with as human beings. And this is a problem that theory should handle. That is not problem of the yield or, and of the old. It's a problem for everyone. And, that's why I think the theory should understand the phenomena that it wishes to understand, to understand deeply what is it about death that is so troublesome for us.
Well, you said was very interesting there that the way that death is thought of psychoanalytically is that you live your whole life and then you die, not you live your whole life with the threat of death impending at any moment. Can you speak to that a little bit? What you mean when you say that's a psychoanalytic interpretation.
Yeah, where can I see it? You could see it, you know, even in I don't know, in the death drive, the Freud has this this peculiar claim that one dies one's own way, that the organism wishes to die in its own way, therefore rejecting other possibilities of death. And this is one place where you can see that. But let's just talk about Erikson for a second, because Erikson was the first person to speak about death anxiety as a problem for as a problem in psychic life, but he does speak only for the very old. In the last in the eighth phase, there is the you either see your life in a more positive way, and then you get integration and stuff, or you get despair and death anxiety. But and I have much to say about this. But one thing is that Erikson, in a way, supposes that only old people die. And now, again, the thing to explain is that young people can die too, and that it's a constant possibility. This is nothing is assured. I mean, there is no time of life that is assured for every one of us. So. Yeah. Okay.
So there are some psychoanalysts who are you do bring Lacan up at one point in your book, and the way in which he kind of does the symbolic restructuring in that kind of school of thought, the argument would be that death is the way in experiencing a death is the way in which one becomes a human subject. It's not that you live your life and then you die. It's that you die first. You have to experience this kind of symbolic death in order to live. Is that just this bizarre reversal for you in this problem?
Whose school of thought is that for you?
I would interpret the Freudian Oedipus through a Lacanian lens as castration being a kind of death. You have to be castrated. You have to experience a symbolic death in order to enter your life as a subject with desire. Some Lacanian psychoanalysts would interpret castration in that way.
I think Lacanians are for me a bit the exception. I mean, there are a few exceptions, and I think the Lacanians are certainly a group that is much where death is really figures much more centrally in their discussion. Another central exception would probably be relational psychoanalysis today, where you can see much more attention to death. I agree with that. I just think that the thing is, what does one mean by castration? I mean, if you, I think in many psychoanalytic texts on death, the just bringing death down to castration is the end of the story. I mean, that is the solution that makes him go on. So how to expand this thing? Well, you know, it's a form of, it's just a variation of castration. Let's speak about castration. That is the important issue. And I just think, I mean, if you understand it in a very large way, like you just said, I mean, probably I won't have much problem with that. But I think What I don't want is that to be reduced to other issues. That's
so we are approaching the end of the interview. We have about 6 more minutes or so left to speak. And I would like to try to pick up on a couple of the different elements that we've been talking about. We've been talking about this problematic in thinking about death, how it's concrete and abstract, and how these two elements kind of make it prone to slipping. And then we also speak about sacrifice as allowing you to come face to face with the concrete element of death in a sort of abstract representation that allows you to identify with the death on almost a personal level. The self doesn't escape the acknowledgement. And then we speak about castration through a Lacanian kind of conception as maybe dealing with this in a different way. Would you, if you take the concept of castration in terms of the structure of the self in relationship to the self or in relationship to the other, would you position this in a similar way as sacrifice? Would you say that something about that structure evokes the possibility of theater?
I'm not sure. I mean, I have some difficulty in locating myself in what you say. I mean, there's, okay. I think, I mean, you can find a few people that were concerned about the problem of death and specifically with the psychoanalytic approach to it, like Ernst Becker in his book Denial of Death. This is really a great book, Denial of Death, and maybe Norman Brown in Life Against Death, and some other people. You could find ways in which basic psychoanalytic terms are reinterpreted in a more, let's say, existential spirit. And this deals specifically with castration and with other concerns, psychoanalytic concerns, just to show the existential facet of it. What maybe one thing that I could say that I think is interesting is that the entire when you look in the interpretation of dreams, for example, and you could see that the theme of Oedipus, for example, and the theme of rivalry and self love in children, like very fundamental themes for psychoanalysis, are actually introduced as part of a discussion on death. It's a discussion of death of others in dreams.
Right.
So for Freud, there is this reverse move of, you know, like trying to understand why, I mean, this peculiar issue of death of others in dreams. And through that, he arrives in what turns out to be the very basic terms of psychoanalysis.
Right. Which is why I draw this relationship between sacrifice as having an element of theater and castration as having an element of theater as well. The dream space that you're talking about, that's viewing the self as an other in theater. When we identify with somebody on a stage, when we identify with the death of some sort of sacrificial animal in some sort of sacrificial play act, we are identifying as the self with an other. The self can be kind of present in there in a different way. It can experience the loss in a different way.
But it is important to say that Freud does also point out and how ingenious we are in rejecting that possibility of identification. For example, that in the beginning of Thoughts for the Times, it says that when other people die, and this is an occasion where we could possibly, you know, like the death could come up as an issue. So we find many ways to reject that possibility. That
right.
It has to do with us too, you know. this one was ill and that one had an accident. When it happens, you know what? And it's a way that we avoid thinking of death. So even when the occasion for identification comes up, we tend to reject it in a way. I think you mentioned theory a couple of times, but Freud specifically rejects also that possibility. He says in theater people die every day, and you know the actors. But when we go there, we go there to find out that we are still alive. We need to feel alive. We don't identify with them. I think maybe much later developments in psychoanalysis could also point it out in ways in which, ways in which some fundamental emptiness or difficulty, like a fear of annihilation, of breakdown within us, could reflect a more fundamental grasp of the psyche of this possibility of annihilation.
It seems that this is sort of almost a necessity, and I would wonder, in closing the interview, we can kind of bring the conversation to a close on this sort of essential kind of point, this essential problematic, which is: we're alive. What do we do? What do we do with the oppressive presence of death? We live every single day with the fundamental, inescapable reality that, as you say, death can happen at any moment. And yet we must. It's kind of, as I'm hearing, you know, this conversation about like death's presence, I'm almost like a little afraid. We must get around that almost in order to go on. If we must get around that in some way.
Yeah, I think the acknowledgement of death and even the anxiety is not the end of the story in a way. I think it's part of our life, also in the sense that this is part of what gives value to life. And this I must bring Freud again, because part of the interesting things he did have to say about that is related exactly to this. In his paper on transience, which is really superb, in just 3 pages, you know, he speaks about the role of finitude exactly in giving value to our life, in making us appreciate life. And he says the transience value is scarcity value in time. Like, things that are scarce are more valuable, so things that are transient are more valuable. And also in Thoughts for the Times, he also says that the not thinking of death has the consequence of making life shallow in a way, whereas acknowledging the risk and to life, that life is a fragile thing, is part of what intensifies life. So I think, and there are many other ways to speak about this and to show this, but I think this is, maybe we can just remain with this point, that is a very significant contribution of Freud to thinking about death, that we value our life more when we are aware of the fact that it's transient.
Yeah, I think that's an optimistic point to land on a personal note, but also a useful point to end on, to try and we can identify all of these ways in which death is closed in psychoanalytic thought, and yet there has to be a possibility for it in order for it to continue in a way that can do something meaningful. So I feel like that's a good place for listeners to kind of think about the way in which, in encountering the book in this impossibility that you identify, there is a way for something else to happen. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Liron.
Thank you.